morning and welcome once again to another Talking Money. This is Mike Miller, your host for today. Got an exciting, well, I shouldn't say exciting topic, a good topic. It's not necessarily exciting, but it's kind of exciting once you get behind it and get those documents done. But Daniel Hicks joins me, estate planning and tax attorney, and we're happy to have him with us. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning.
But you're going to help me welcome a new addition to my family. I can't talk to you until we talk about Dawson Michael coming into our lives on Thursday afternoon about 11 after 2 after about 35 hours of labor. My daughter-in-law was in labor for that long, my son David. So Dawson Michael was born if this were TV, I could show everybody some pictures.
That's right.
But I've already shown everybody here in the studio the pictures, so you have to come by the office and see those pictures. But cute guy, of course, I would think so, but I think he is, even if I wasn't so
biased. That's okay. You're allowed
biased.
To be biased. Well, congratulations.
I'm glad to be biased. So 7 pounds, 5 ounces, and 20 inches, healthy and doing well, coming home today. So we're excited about that and this new stage in our life. So far, you know, he hasn't said anything or smiled or, well, you know, I probably gasped, but, you know, it looks like a smile. But anyway, so we're excited about where God's going to take us with that. But and the estate planning changes now for him.
That's right. You get to leave everything to him, right?
That's right.
He's the only grandchild.
Sorry, guys. The other four kids, it's like four kids are out. Dawson gets it all.
That's right.
So that's what you get for being the first grandkid,
yep.
I guess.
Uh-huh.
So, we kid about that, but it does change your thought process.
It does. It definitely does.
And for my son as well. Now, mm-hmm. he's got to do estate planning that includes a child, which he hasn't had to do up to this point. But we're not talking about that today. So we're talking about maybe something a little more boring instead of just talking about the grandkids coming or how you might even provide for your grandkids, although you could do it with a trust. We're talking about trusts. And the promo I've been using this week talked about how to pick a trustee and things you need to watch out. We want to discuss that, but I thought it would really be good, Daniel, if we gave everybody a good basis and let's talk about the types of trust. Because a lot of people that you run into think, I don't need a trust, man. I don't have enough money for a trust. I'm not sophisticated. I don't have tax issues. I don't have this other issue, whatever. I have great family. Everybody's going to get along. Yeah, we know how that goes.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work out that way. But there are certainly some types of trust that almost everybody should consider having, especially if you have a minor child, like my son does now, that would take care of that child up until they at least reach age majority and maybe reach the age of common sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because trusts are somewhat unique to sort of the Western part of the world. These don't
right.
exist in China and things like that. So mm-hmm. we inherited our law from England, and the use of trust really dates back all the way to the Norman times. But let's kind of define what a trust is first
sure.
of all, because I think you're right. People have this idea that, oh, a trust is for some, you know, fancy, ultra rich, whatever. And it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, they serve multi purposes. So a trust is really nothing more than I give you an asset, whether it's cash, land, stocks, whatever it may be. And I say, please hold this in trust for the benefit of, you know, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
In that relationship, there's three parties. You know, I am the grantor or the creator of the trust. You're the trustee. And
because I'm overseeing the
right.
I'm overseeing the trust
yep.
assets.
Yeah, you manage it, oversee it, mm-hmm. Figure out how it's going to be used. And then my wife is the beneficiary. So you have an obligation. You really don't own those assets in the sense that you have title to it. But your sole job is to say what's in the best interest of Daniel's wife, you know, yeah. how to manage it. So that's really all a trust is. Now, there's multiple uses of that and different facets of it, but that's kind of generally what it is. And there are two types of trust, too, in general. One is revocable, meaning you can change it at any time. You can amend it or revoke it or throw it away. And the other kind is called irrevocable or
right.
not changeable.
You can't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you set it up and you kind of have to leave it alone. So.
And then there's a lot of different types of trusts underneath each of those.
Yes.
You've got a living trust or you've got the testamentary trust and how it might be established to begin with. So what are some reasons people set up trust that even may not necessarily be just because I'm wealthy?
Yeah. So we can set up trust to avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one sometimes. It could certainly be for tax reasons. So a lot of times someone who has a higher net worth, or sometimes actually just an asset that's very valuable that they're wanting a specific tax mm-hmm. treatment, they can set
right.
up different types of trust. Sometimes it can be just for the protection of a child. So you congratulations on your grandson. So, for example, if you're leaving assets to that grandson, he is a minor. He's under age 18. He can't own it. So you might leave a gift in trust for him just simply because it's far better than letting a court have to administer that.
Right.
You can
and
do
and
it.
I did say, mm-hmm. you might not have caught that, but I said by the time they reach age of majority or the age of common sense. So it could be, right, it could be that you want it to last a lot longer than 18 or 21. You want to get up to where they have some experience and aren't going to waste all the money. That
I should clarify, just because the law says they can have it at 18 doesn't mean they should.
Right.
So, exactly. And the older, the more I practice, the older I think that age should be. I'm like up to 40 now.
Yeah. So. I think I'm at 55.
But. That's right. Right. So, but anyway, so there are asset protection reasons. Sometimes you can create a trust in order to protect an asset from lawsuits. Sometimes folks will set up trusts in order to qualify for Medicaid or whatever. So there's a lot of reasons to set up trust that doesn't necessarily, depend on, you know, the fact that you have to be rich to do it.
Right. And Chad Groover, you know, Chad, well, mm-hmm. he was on the show a month or so ago talking about the Medicaid part and, things like that.
Right.
And I know you taught him everything you know, but everything he knows, but that's
all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Knows.
Sorry. That's right. We'll say that.
Right.
So, protecting minor children and protecting a spouse against themselves. Maybe they're spendthrift. You want to make sure they don't spend the money. Maybe protecting, the children against a spouse remarrying.
Yes.
Right. And the assets going to the new spouse or the new spouse's children, maybe even worse.
Yeah. I mean, I've even had clients say, you know, I can't, I have a client right now who has some rental properties, but she's elderly and she doesn't want to deal with it. So she's created a trust and we've kind of put those real estate, those real properties in the trust. She's got a trustee. Well, she can fire him at any time. She is of sound mind. She knows what she's doing, but she says, you know, I just don't want to have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very nice mechanism for entrusting someone to deal with it for you. Now, she's going to keep an eye on things. So it could be as simply as that. Sometimes it's a matter of convenience.
Right. Yeah. And we'll talk, as long as we remember, we'll talk about later the ability to fire or have in your document the ability to fire a trustee. So that in case there are some issues, if it's a corporate trustee and there's some requirements, you can certainly put in there, but the type of trustee that they you want them to have. If you want it always to be a corporate trustee, maybe not, but you certainly want the beneficiaries to have that right. But you got to be careful with that even because the beneficiary may just willy-nilly fire because they don't do what they think they should do, even though the trust document's pretty clear that you're not supposed to do that, but I'll find a trustee who will.
Oh, yeah, they want to fire them and put their boyfriend in as a trustee.
Yeah, you know,
that,
right. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, that doesn't always work well.
We do not want that to happen. Okay, so one of the things that everyone has to deal with, whether or not you're And younger people have to do this all the time where they're talking about, thinking about who's going to be the guardian of my child if something happens to me. But then they also have to think about who's going to be the custodian of the assets or the trustee if there's a trust set up in that will that says, I want the money to go to the trust for the child's benefit until the child gets of age or of common sense, whatever that is. You still need to name somebody. So who are some of the people you should consider or maybe even more importantly, not to consider?
Yeah, right. Well, and you bring up a good point. One thing that sometimes clients, you know, folks have trouble with is all these different terms and agent and attorney in fact and guardian. Let's make sure our listeners understand the difference just briefly about, say, a guardian, for example, or conservator. That's the person who actually has custody of someone. So it's not necessarily financial. It more deals with, you know, who's going to raise my children? Who's going to clothe them, feed them? Frankly, that's the harder job than a trustee. But, and then we have an executor or personal representative. Folks need to understand that person doesn't come into existence or that role doesn't come into existence until you die. It's never until that point. And that's a limited role. So that person's responsible for paying final debts, burial, all that kind of stuff. And then their job is done. A trustee is unique in that they have management over something that could last for a very long time. So, you know, your question, how do I choose that person? You know, who do we trust as trustee? And I would say the very first thing, this sounds kind of obvious, but it needs to be trustworthy. The person needs to be trustworthy. They need to have demonstrated in their life that they can handle money, that they are, that they're very well organized.
Or if they can't handle the money themselves, they know how to hire a trust administrator, somebody like Plan First or some other trusted person that they can rely on. They're smart enough to know what they don't know.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because there are certain personalities and types that are more, you know, in tune with doing it and being a trustee. You know, I always say never name an entrepreneur as a trustee. I sort of joke because you know, if someone says, I'm just really not good with details and remembering things, I'm like, well, they probably shouldn't be a trustee.
Yeah, you need to be.
It's something of a boring job. I mean, you have to detail, but now that brings up one thing is you want a trustee, someone who is willing to go out and get help. So, you know, if I'm a trustee, even though I'm a lawyer, I'm going to get investment advice. I'm not an investment guy. I don't know what stocks to buy or you know, bonds, whatever. So I'm going to hire someone like yourself to say, all right, you know, I've got a beneficiary and how do we invest this? And I probably even will be able to hire an accountant to say, I want you to do the tax returns.
Do the reporting.
So my job is just to manage it.
We're going to talk some more about this, of course, more about the things you need to consider when you're talking about thinking through the options of who should be the trustee. 877-235-9405 is our phone number. If you want to get on the program and ask Daniel Hicks, myself, a question, especially Daniel, since he's here, we want to pick his brain as much as we can, but it's your opportunity to ask whatever question you want to related to trust, estate planning, those kind of things. We'll have more discussion about this with trustee and how to pick them and how not to pick them when we get back. But text us or call us, 877-235-9405. We'll be right back. If you have listened to Talking Money for any length of time, you realize that I'm trying to educate, not sell, any products. Unfortunately, so many financial shows are just that, shows. They're trying their best to discourage and even scare listeners in hopes that you'll make an appointment to visit with them, and that's when the real selling begins. Plan for sponsors this program with the primary purpose of giving you some real, actionable ideas that we think will help you maximize your financial opportunities, but with no hidden agenda, because we're not trying to sell anything. Of course, we always welcome the opportunity to visit with you if you think that the services we perform for our clients would benefit you. Our process is pretty straightforward. You simply call the Plan First offices. Our number is 800-588-7526 and tell Andrea or Tracy that you would like to speak with me, Mike Miller, or one of our other advisors. Now you can see all of our advisory team on the Plan First website, which is at planfirst.com. Another easy way of starting the conversation is to simply send an email to info@planfirst.com. Our first goal is to find out enough information about your current situation and your objectives to determine if it makes sense for us to even meet. If so, we'll set up a convenient time for you to meet with me and several other advisors that I think would work best with you. That's based on our conversation that we had on the phone. At the initial meeting, we want to learn as much as we can about your expectations. The next step, assuming we both feel comfortable moving forward, is to send you a link to a risk profile questionnaire. Now, if you complete that questionnaire, we'll assume you're comfortable coming back for at least the next meeting. When we meet the second time, we'll answer any questions that you thought of since our first meeting, because oftentimes we think of questions we should have asked after we leave a meeting, and then we'll review the risk assessment together. Now, at this point, we'll let you know if we think we are a good fit and we think we can meet your expectations. And this is where people think the hard sell begins. But don't worry. If you're not ready to make that decision, we will literally leave you alone until you get back to us. That doesn't mean that we don't want you as a client. We want the decision to be well thought and deliberate. We think this is one of the reasons that the vast majority of clients that come to Plan First stay at Plan First. And the phone number for Plan First, once again, is 1-800-588-7526 or email us at info@planfirst.com. And welcome back to Talking Money. This is Certified Financial Planner Mike Miller, your host for today, along with my special guest, Daniel Hicks, tax and estate planning attorney. We're talking about trusts and trustees, things you need to think about when you're naming a trustee or how to figure out who to name and so forth. And we've got some open lines, 877-235-9405. If you want to text us a question or you can give us a call. And Bill has done that, so we're going to switch to Bill, who's calling us from Bostic, North Carolina. Good morning, Bill, and welcome to Talking Money.
I'm not sure if it's safe to turn the radio on.
You're not sure if it's safe to turn the radio on?
Yeah, because it'll make an echo with the phone.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, leave your radio off and just talk through the phone. That works well.
Okay.
So what can we do for you today, Bill?
Well, I'm wondering. I've heard of people using these trusts to protect their assets. I'm kind of old and been saving money all my life, don't have a lot. And people have told me that there can be liability suits brought that your assets can be protected by a trust. And I'm not sure if that was true or not.
Okay, good question. Daniel?
Yes, it's a good question. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to that. But in general, yes, you can use a trust to protect assets. Now, typically what you have to do is you have to create a trust that's called an irrevocable trust, meaning once you set it up, you have to give up control over those assets. So in North Carolina, which is where you are, and in South Carolina, that we do not have what's called a domestic asset protection trust, which means you cannot put assets into a trust and then say, well, they're no longer mine and they are forever protected from my creditors or anything like that. We don't have statutes that allow for that. Tennessee is the next closest jurisdiction. So you could do that. And then the rule on that is you would have to have a Tennessee trustee, but it still works even though your assets in North Carolina. So it can be done. There are some, you know, advantages and disadvantages to doing that. I think probably the most common example that you can do in North Carolina, for example, is to say, well, I'm going to create a trust. I'm going to put assets into it so that I don't have too much if I ever need Medicaid. That is certainly possible to do as well.
Yeah. And Bill, I think depending on the size of your estate, another option, this won't protect the assets directly, but it may help keep an attorney from going after you personally. And that is to just purchase an umbrella liability policy, which is going to protect you against most. It doesn't protect you against the suits, but it provides some funds so that if you are at fault in some instance, from your car, from your home or whatever, doing something personally, at least there's some money there. And for $1 million, there again, depending on your age, you said you're older, but that, you know, that's relative to me, at least now he is.
Right.
Me. Yeah. Yeah. So it, right. It depends on that. But, you know, buying $1 million and paying a couple $100 a year for that at least is a start to help protect. And if you have a lot of assets more than that, then you buy more liability, and then you still ought to consider one of these asset protection ways of doing it. But that's an option.
Yeah, and Bill, you know, this is kind of under the topic of asset protection. Asset protection is everything about layers. So, for example, the very first layer is exactly what Mike says, an umbrella, you know, good insurance. The second layer, usually we use limited liability companies. In North Carolina, they are actually more effective than they are in South Carolina. But you can create an LLC to hold certain real estate that you may be renting out, things like that. And that, if you do it correctly, that'll provide another layer of protection. And then a third layer may be a trust that actually owns the LLC. So, you know, what we typically do is we sit down and say, all right, what assets are high risk and which ones are we really trying to protect and those kind of things. And we kind of go through stuff.
All right, Bill, does that give you enough to go on for now?
Yes, it certainly does, and we already have an umbrella policy in place. I think your show is excellent, Mike. I listen every single week.
Oh, great.
And I've learned a lot from listening to the show, and I'm probably going to, if it wasn't, I'm old. I'm almost 80 years old.
Okay.
And it seems like a long drive to Greenville. Otherwise, I'd already have been there.
Where is Bostic,
yeah,
by the way?
Near Forest City.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Sure. I know where that is. I'm from North Carolina originally, so I know exactly where Forest City is, so.
Oh, okay.
All right, Bill. Well, thanks for the call. Keep listening.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Okay, so good question from Bill from Bostic. Bill from Bostic. So we were talking before he called. 877-235-9405 is the number if you want to call or text us a question. Go ahead and do that at any time. We'll get you in as fast as we can get you in. But talking about trustees, what exactly does a trustee do?
Yeah, so their rule is to say, once they are willing to take over as trustee, so let's say I've passed away and I've left assets for the benefit of my children, the trustee's first job is to make sure they start collecting the assets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, calling insurance companies, filing claims, perhaps calling the custodian of my IRA to see if they're going to have to take that in. You know, protecting the house. I mean, if I have a house, you know, utilities, all those kind of things, sitting down with someone like yourself to say, all right, what assets are there? And we call it marshaling the assets. Typically what they're doing is they're liquidating certain things and they're trying to put it all in one big pot. Now they're going to sit with you maybe and say, how do we diversify and stuff? But
right.
Their most immediate goal is to make sure we get all that stuff collected. We know where it is. And then their second step is to
say. On that first step, shameless plug.
Yes.
I mean, if someone has a client of Plan First, we've done all this analysis, and we've already done essentially the inventories. We know where everything is. So whenever their trustee contacts us, and we try to meet the personal representative and the child who's going to be the trustee, or if it's going to be a corporate trustee, I mean, once they contact us, they say, okay, yeah, we know where everything is. We know how it's titled. We know what's going where. What a much easier transition for that trustee if you've got somebody that's going to help you organize that stuff.
That's exactly right. And so I will shamelessly say I've had sometimes told clients, listen, you can pay me to do all that stuff for you, or you can go to the financial advisor. They'll do it for free.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Or at least that's part of our fee. I mean, it's included in there, but a lot of advisors don't do that. As you well know, a lot of advisors don't go in the depth that we go into. So
right. They just want to do the investment and not mess with all this.
That's
stuff.
Right. Don't forget about that. Let me get my money and go.
It's a lot to do at a time. Sometimes it's a tough time. So, so once they have that, they will invariably sit down with an attorney and say, all right, what am I supposed to do? And that's where we actually look at the trust document itself to say, what does the trust say you're supposed to do? And so if it says, for example, my kids, help pay for their education, their support, their maintenance, what does that mean? A good thing, a good trustee will sit down and to say, all right, who's the guardian? What do the kids need? What are they? How old are they? Are they in school? Are they in private school? Are they in public school? Does anybody have any special needs? What are their medical concerns? All that kind of stuff.
If they're adult kids, are they hard to deal with?
Oh yeah, that's a whole nother ball.
If you're the trustee and you don't know the family that well, or even if you do, you want to consider, I'm going to have to deal with this beneficiary well into adulthood, maybe by the time they're 55, like we said, or 45.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be in control of those assets for somebody.
It really is. And that's something as we, maybe after the next break, we need to talk about who do you name as trustee and who does that person, how do they deal with the really hard situations in the family? Yeah. But that's generally what they're, and they have to pay, they have to file tax returns.
Make sure,
so they need to get an accountant that will do all that kind of stuff. They need to make sure, as far as the investment of it, they're responsible. Now they can entrust that to Plan First, but they need to be the one who's watching that and making sure they understand things.
Ultimately, they're still the one that's responsible from the court standpoint.
That's exactly right.
They're it.
Yeah. And one question comes up is like, when you make distributions, do you have to give the money to the kids? Like, no. And in most cases, if they're going to school and they're going to college, you write the check directly to the college or you're paying expenses directly usually.
You might want to do that to make sure the money actually gets to the college.
Oh yeah. That's exactly right.
To a new car or something like that.
You don't give the 18-year-old, $10,000 and say, here, pay your bills.
Yeah. That doesn't generally go too well. No. All right. 877-235-9405 is our phone number, our text line number, either one. We'll be back after this break to talk some more about the trustee and who to actually name and to watch out if things like the trustee decides they don't want to do it anymore when the chips get down. We'll have all those questions to come to us after we get back from this break. But give us a call, 877-235-9405. We'll be right back. Being appointed as a trustee, that's a huge responsibility. And maybe you're going to be named as a trustee in the future, but you need to know the responsibility that comes with that. Some of the more common types of trusts are family trusts. Sometimes we call those bypass trusts. Q-tip trust is another that's typically used. That provides a surviving spouse with a regular income while they are living, but it makes sure that your heirs get the money, not the children of the new spouse if they get remarried. And we also manage a number of charitable remainder trusts. Now, this is a great way to get a current tax deduction. Provides you and your spouse with a potentially higher monthly income from the exact same assets because of some tax savings there. But that's while you're both alive. And then when you're both gone, the money goes to your favorite church, ministry, or charity. Now, as the trustee, you have a huge fiduciary duty to be sure those trust assets are invested appropriately. Plus, you are the one that has to be sure that all the tax reporting that's very unique to trust is filed on time. Most people think that you need to use one of those big bank trust departments to handle the trust, but I think there's a good alternative that you should at least consider. Plan First currently helps clients with many different types of trusts. Now, Plan First typically acts as the trust advisor. That essentially means that we help you not only manage the assets according to the trust document, we're also going to help you actually operate the trust, which is even better when you realize that we don't charge any extra fee for that work. Now, if you need a corporate trustee, Plan First has a relationship with several local and national trust companies. I think this gives our clients access to some of the best, real, high-quality trust accounting and trustee services. And from what I've seen in the marketplace, that's a very competitive cost, too. Now, if you want to discuss this further with me, give me a call, 233-7405 or 1-800-588-7526. Or you can always send me an email at info@planfirst.com. Now back to more Talking Money. And welcome back to Talking Money. This is Certified Financial Planner Mike Miller, your host for today, along with my special guest, Daniel Hicks, estate planning and tax attorney, talking about trusts and all the fun things that you need to do with that. But if you got a question for us, 877-235-9405. You can text us the question or you can give us a call. We'll be glad to get you on the air and ask that question. Nothing to be afraid of. It's just us sitting here talking. We'll be glad to answer that question just like we're sitting across from each other at the table.
That's right.
That's all there is to it.
I mean, there's no
which
fee.
Which is what we're doing.
You get to talk to a lawyer for free.
No fee. Yeah, congrats.
That's right.
And that's a big deal. So that's what you get from Talking Money. We get some good guests in here and they're willing to share and educate because that's what Talking Money is all about, trying to educate, not sell like most of the other financial, and I put that in big quotes, financial programs, I really would call them shows, that are out there. So we don't want to do that. So we're talking about trustees. We're talking a little bit about the things they need to do, which also is going to help you determine who might be the person you would pick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can pick a relative, we can pick a corporation. What do you think?
Yeah, and those are discussions that we as attorneys, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to the client about it because it's sometimes hard for the client to think of this, you know, but we're writing something that'll have an effect, could be 20, 30 years down the road. Yeah. Be in existence for a long time. So I think the most difficult time is when someone says, well, you know, we've got children from a previous marriage, or we've got someone who has special needs, or frankly, we've got a child or someone that we're leaving something to in trust, but they can't handle money, or, you know, mm-hmm. we've got a drug problem, an alcohol problem, or the kind of spouse we don't like, whatever it may be. And so invariably it says, you know, we're going to ask them, well, who do you want to be trustee?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what surprises me is how few times clients have actually thought about that.
Right.
So who are we going to name to have to make those tough decisions? And I call it the Thanksgiving dinner test.
Okay.
If you name your trustee and then when all the family gets together for Thanksgiving, it's going to lead to a fight. Don't name that person. I don't care how great they are, how trustworthy, all those kind of things, because it's tough on them.
Right.
They don't want to have a family gathering and they spend the whole time people mad at them because they won't make a distribution for the car or whatever it may be.
So what is the benefit then of telling the whole family that that's the person? What if you just don't tell them that's the person?
Yeah.
And hope that it all works out. But I mean, do you advise typically people to say, yeah, have these family meetings and make sure everybody knows here's how things are going to happen. Here's this person's going to be the mm-hmm. personal representative. This person's going to be the trustee.
Yeah, sometimes that works, but yeah. In most cases, they're not telling the family ahead of time.
Right.
It's just going to be a surprise and here it is kind of thing. And you know, the person who can do that, I think is truly unique. I would think most folks can't do that. And when I say can't, it's just too hard and it's almost unfair mm-hmm. for them to do it because you're saying to the individual, here, you're going to have to make decisions about, you know, my daughter who wants money, but you know, she's going to blow it because her husband always buys a boat and a car and it's just money in, money out. So what we talk about and I ask the client is like, listen, if you leave in a large sum and you've got a child who has a drug habit, are they going to be able to say no? Are they going to be able to say, and a lot of times they'll say, yeah, I think my friend can do that. So we'll talk about, well, maybe you should name a trusted friend of mm-hmm. the family, someone who has got a little bit of distance, some objectivity. And if you can't.
People have respect for, maybe the rest of the family really respects this person.
Yeah, exactly. And if they can't do that, if they say, you know, we just don't want to put a family member in that position. And by the way, you should talk to that family member first before you do something like that. If they don't have somebody like that, then we need to start talking about a corporate trustee. Okay. And when I say corporate trustee, we're talking about, people tend to think of banks, but it could be a local trust company. It's basically mm-hmm. a company that exists to serve solely as trustee. Mm-hmm. They will take on that responsibility and they take on the liability. You know, if they don't do it right,
sure.
they don't do it correctly, they could be sued.
And we work with a number of those kind of trustees and mm-hmm. it's what's hard for us. And I think for the client, because the client wants to have a firm like Plan First that's in charge of the investment part, but then have a corporate trustee.
Yeah, right.
A lot of times a corporate trustee says, no, we want it all or we don't have anything. But there are some out there that we have Schwab bank that has mm-hmm. Schwab Trust, and we have Arthur State that does that. There's some other banks that do that that don't require the assets to be with them, which gives you some good checks and balances. Now you got more than one person involved in it that right. can help you with those issues.
Yeah, and there's a lot of you have a lot of options. So, you know, for example, I met with someone yesterday, and they said, well, I think my daughter can do this, and they're overseeing a trust for a bunch of nephews and nieces. And they said, but you know, it's she probably needs some help. And I said, well, why don't you name it as a co-trustee, a corporate trustee, a local mm-hmm. trust company mm-hmm. that can kind of help her say, all right, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, you got to file these tax forms and we'll take care of this, but we're going to rely on you to tell us what these kids need. And, mm-hmm. and you're the boots on the ground kind of thing.
Right.
So there's a lot of ways of working that.
So advantages and disadvantages, corporate trustee versus individual trusted person.
The disadvantages of an individual person is they don't always know what they're doing, and they're not necessarily willing to get that help because right. I think it's expensive, but they need to. The conflicts of interest, and when I mean that, not necessarily legal, but just the pull they have, the emotional drain it can take on them. That individual trustee can get sick, or they can die, or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. and then who's next? The advantage of the individual trustee is obviously it's usually cheaper. They're usually not charging, though they're entitled to charge. Mm-hmm. They usually aren't charging
and
for their services.
And oftentimes should, because
they may
be an equal beneficiary because they're one of the children. They're going to mm-hmm. get it. But then they say, well, I shouldn't charge anything for that. But really, there's expenses involved.
Yes.
And then your time involved and so forth. So.
I always put in my documents that they're entitled to compensation. Mm-hmm. I would say most of the time individual trustees don't charge it. But I always say, listen, you may need to in this case because you're doing a lot of work. The advantage of a corporate trustee is they know what they're doing. They're around all the time, so they're not going to be incapacitated. They're not going to die. Right. They know all the tax ins and outs. And like you mentioned, when it comes to the investment side of it, they can come to Plan First and say, you guys take care of the investment side of it. We'll make sure all the regulatory stuff. They're objective. And I sometimes will tell clients, you know what? Let's name a corporate trustee so whenever the family gets together at Thanksgiving, they can all sit around and gripe about that corporate trustee. They can all hate them together. And I will tell folks sometimes the corporate trustee knows that they're a little bit the bad guy. They know they're the one that's going to say no in a lot of cases.
Right.
The biggest disadvantage of the corporate trustee is they charge a fee. And usually it's around 1% of the value of the trust assets. Mm-hmm. It could be more if there's real estate and business interest. Those
and that's
kind of
assuming
things.
They're doing all the trust services, investment management. That's usually about 1% for everything.
Right.
Plus maybe some underlying cost in the investments. But
right. There's variations. Yep. That's just as a general rule.
Right.
So, I have clients all the time like, oh, I don't want to pay for that. I'm like, well, sometimes it's a whole lot cheaper to pay that fee than to leave it to an individual who's going to maybe mess things up.
It costs more not to pay it.
Yeah, or an individual trustee might say, I'll do it, and they do it well, and then after a while they're like, I can't do this anymore. This is just, I can't do it.
Yeah, so what do you do if a trustee says, a corporate trustee is never going to do that because they always have somebody else that's going to be a backup to them.
Yes.
But if it's an individual, then you want to have a backup trustee. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and their documents, folks need to think about that. If this individual I've named just gets sick or incapacitated or just can't do it anymore, we probably need to have a provision that says, if my friend, whatever, can't do it, then I name XYZ corporate trustee to do it, for example, or another individual. Okay. I have a lot of ways of doing that. You could say, for example, it's corporate trustee, but the beneficiaries have the right to remove that corporate trustee and replace them with another one.
Right. That was one of my next questions. I think it's pretty important to have that in there.
I do too, because you can name a really nice trust company and the people there, and then they retire and that corporate trustee gets bought out by a humongous outfit, and now suddenly you got to call an 800 number for someone in New York to find out, and it's really lost its purpose.
So one of the advantages of the corporate trustee was their objective. They can they cannot be emotional, and that can be on the same on the flip side of that a disadvantage because they don't understand the family, they don't understand the dynamics, they're not involved in that, and especially they keep changing trustees, and you got this trust officer and that person goes away and they put in another trust officer. So you have those dynamics, and that's why it's important to say, if I can remove you, the chances are you're going to be nicer to me. You're going to treat me better than if I just can't remove you. Then it's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I had a client one time. She was in her 60s, and her grandfather set up this trust back in the 40s or whatever when he died. And it had $1 million in it, but frankly, the company that was trustee, it was just way too small for this particular outfit. Mm-hmm. I won't say who that was. Yeah. And she couldn't ever meet with anybody. It was like she had to call Delaware and all this stuff. So I actually approached that trust company and said, would you be willing to resign and let a local trust company? In that situation, I think they were happy with that. And so we have a local trust company, and she's thrilled because now she gets to sit down with a face and know who that is.
Right, somebody, much more personal.
Right, yeah. It makes a big difference.
Okay, we got to take our last break here. 877-235-9405 is our text line, phone line. We're just going to have about 10 minutes when we get back from this break. So if you want to get your question asked so we can answer it, then you want to do that right now during this break. 877-235-9405. Text or call us, and we'll be right back. Plan First is excited to sponsor Talking Money, now in its 11th year of broadcasting. I believe Plan First is unique in the financial services profession for a couple of reasons. The level of education and experience of the Plan First team makes us specially qualified to provide the level of financial planning I think so many people need. Our goal is to utilize every technique and planning tool that's available to help you pay as little in taxes as possible. I'm sure you like that. Develop an estate plan that not only minimizes estate and gift taxes, but more importantly, I think it maximizes the effective transfer of the estate to the next generation, or maybe you prefer having some of it go to a ministry. We want to help create and implement a retirement income strategy. We also want to construct a portfolio that's going to satisfy your income needs, but we want to do it within that risk level with which you are comfortable. Now, to help avoid the obvious conflicts of interest that so many brokers and other, quote, financial advisors, unquote, who represent their company, not you, Plan First operates as a true fee-only, and we don't want to be confused with a fee-based firm. We have no commissions, no kickbacks, or no fee splits. We never receive any of that. Our only compensation is very transparent, and based on what I've seen, very competitive. It's a fee that's deducted right from your account each quarter. As a true fiduciary, Plan First works for you. If you'd like to know more, or if you think this is something worth checking out, please call Plan First at 1-800-588-7526 to speak with me, Mike Miller, or one of our advisors. Of course, you can always simply check us out at planfirst.com. Now back to Talking Money. We're into the home stretch of Talking Money. This is Mike Miller, your host for today, along with Daniel Hicks, tax and estate planning attorney that I've known for years and enjoy working with him. Have a lot of joint clients that we work with. If you want to get a hold of Daniel after the show is over, you want to ask him some more questions and maybe see if he can help you out, he's got a toll-free number. His number is 877-794-2279. So it's 877 toll free, 877-794-2279. All right, Daniel, we got Alan here calling us. Let's see if we can get Alan on the phone and see if we can answer his question. Good morning, Alan from Spartanburg.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, glad to do it.
The question I had, and I like the idea of being able to manage your money that you leave to your heirs. I've seen some I had some cousins whose father was a doctor several years ago who died, and everybody got X amount of money, and it was a study in sociology to see who did what with what theirs, and I think only really one of them actually applied it to an education, and she became like a nurse anesthetist, and of course that dividend is paying dividends for her for the rest of her life. The others, you know, hey, you know, a 79 Corvette just doesn't hold its value like, you know.
Yeah. So should have bought a 55.
Exactly. At a young age, I was able to say, you know, you work all your life, you make the savings, and you want to give it to your heirs, and you hate to see them do such a thing. And that, I was asking the question, my main question is, is there a minimum amount that you have to start a trust?
All right, good question. Yeah.
For instance, I have a lot of liquidity, you know, in the form of a 401k, a 457, a Roth, and then I have cash, and then I have real assets like a house and some land. So if I liquidated everything, I guess, except the penalties on the retirement money, if I liquidated everything and just put it in one big pile,
how much would I need to start a trust? And of course, everything's going to be done after my death. So I guess that would be part of the executor's, movement.
Right. So, so, Alan, that's a good question. As a general rule, South Carolina law says that a trust can be terminated as just not economical if it's under $100,000. Now, that's just an optional, though. So I've had plenty of clients who, for example, say, well, I'm going to leave $25,000 to my three grandchildren, but I want it held in trust until they reach a certain age. And you can certainly do that. I would say in that case, you're probably going to name an individual trustee because it's not worth the expense of a corporate trustee. So by law, there is not a minimum amount that you have to put into a trust. I think $100,000 is sort of a good rule of thumb. But I just have so many examples where clients say, $50,000 is still a whole lot of money, and I want to leave that to this person or that person. And I know it won't last for a long time, but it'll certainly last a whole lot longer than what'll happen if I just give them that $50,000.
And probably more likely, the smaller it is, Alan, the more likely you're going to want to use an individual, not a corporate trustee, just to keep it. Otherwise, it's not going to be cost effective. But you did say, Alan, I think, let's say you had IRA, you had 457s, you had all those qualified accounts. You wouldn't want necessarily your personal representative to liquidate all that stuff and put it into the trust. That's where you might need to have multiple trusts. So the IRA, 457s, 403Bs, all those may need to be kept in a separate IRA type pass-through trust that's going to keep its tax entity, its tax relationship, and then be able to take distributions out over time instead of paying all the taxes at once at presumably a much higher tax bracket.
Exactly. And I think, Alan, one of the questions they have is, the smaller the trust, probably the shorter the duration and you want that trust to. So if you're saying I'm leaving $25,000 to a grandkid, you're probably going to say, but that trust can terminate when a grandkid turns 25. Just because, it's not going to last the grandkid's lifetime. So usually you're saying, hey, the smaller amount, I want to kind of make it for a very specific purpose. And I just don't want them to have that outright distribution right away.
Yeah.
My thinking was this. Okay, you've got these qualified accounts, and I also have an inherited IRA. Okay, so let's say, for instance, at the end of the year when all the distributions are made from the qualified systems, they all get put in one big pile. And whatever growth there is, let's say I have three children, my thinking was everybody's going to get 25% of the gross.
Yeah.
After all the bills are paid, all the taxes are paid and everything, everybody gets 25% of that. And then there's the remainder would be maybe 5% to my best friend who's going to manage this thing. But there's a remainder of 20% that stays in there to help the overall trust grow. Is that a reasonable thinking?
No, it's not. And I will tell you that anytime you're talking about leaving an IRA or 401k or SEP or simple or 457, any kind of qualified retirement plan to a trust, the reality there are some tax issues that you have to deal with. So the trust has to be very carefully drafted so that the trust is not paying a 38% income tax on the distributions, but we can accomplish that, and it's not unreasonable. The wonderful thing about trusts is you can do all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. You can set whatever terms and conditions you want to have in there. Probably what I would challenge you to think about is before you name a trust as the beneficiary of an IRA, I would want an understanding of exactly why, because there's a little bit of there's more cost to the administration of that trust with IRAs. So I want to make sure I understand, why are we doing that for your children? Is it a concern for not able to handle money or whatever it may be? So that's kind of what you have to weigh a little bit.
Yeah. Anybody under 40, most people under 50, can't handle money.
Right.
Yeah, we both see them every day.
Well, I'm 48. I hope I've got a little bit of a handle on things now.
Well, you're one of the exceptions. So I understand in the qualified account, somebody is going to have to be taxed.
Right.
Got to be, so it can't just be, a thing that's taxed. I guess somebody's got to carry the burden.
Well, and what you do is you split those into separate shares so that each beneficiary, it's based on their life expectancy. But if we want to run it through a trust, we call it a conduit trust. If we want to run it through a trust, you can do that and still have it based on that beneficiary's life, you know, their rate of return. So I'd much rather have a beneficiary, you know, if their tax rate is 15%, that's a whole lot better than a trust rate of, say, 38 or even 41%.
If the qualified accounts are put into a trust, mm-hmm. for instance, I give child A, this is your third portion.
Yes.
Of this Roth.
Right.
You cannot liquidate this thing. You've got to take your required minimum distribution every year, and you got to, you know, this thing is going to grow and grow and grow.
Sure.
You can only bequeath it to bloodline of offspring. No stepchildren, anything like that.
Well, you dictate that in the trust. So you're setting the parameters in the trust. So you are somewhat controlling it beyond the grave.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Alan.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Okay. So, and those, some of the issues he brought up with beneficiaries and doing really taking it out of your lifetime and all those. We've had some really discussions not too long ago. So go to planfirst.com, go to the Talking Money section. And then when you get that section, you can go to the part that talks about individual retirement accounts and retirement planning. And there'll be several shows we talk specifically about IRAs and how they need to be set up to make sure that, that they're done correctly and at the most tax advantage. All right. So we got a minute left, Daniel. So any other quick advice that we need to give to everybody? We talked about how much to pay a friend.
Yeah, sometimes folks will say, what if there's a trust and I don't think the trustee's doing right? Well, if you're a beneficiary of a trust, you certainly have the right to a copy of the trust agreement. You have a right to demand what's called an accounting. That trustee needs to tell you how much money came into it, what is it earned, and how has it been spent. You always have the right to find out if you're a beneficiary.
All right. Well, Daniel, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Once again, I'll give Daniel's phone number, 877-794-2279. So if you got a question for Daniel, think maybe he can help you. He's a great estate planning attorney. We use him a lot and have a lot of respect for him. So I think you'll be very pleased. So anyway, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week for some more Talking Money.